It is a Friday, another beautiful Friday night, high school football Friday, as we get you into your sports weekend with the Sports Rush, your daily local sports fix, 4 to 6. I am Brett Rump, along with Caleb Hatch. We are packed up until 6 o'clock, and then we'll turn it over to the gang out at Homestead's Dave Walters Stadium as Jim, Shannon, and Duke get ready for the Parkview Sports Medicine High School football tailgate pregame show. Just ahead of your play-by-play coverage of the Snyder Panthers and the Homestead Spartans tonight, as our 1380 The Fan 100.9 FM high school football game of the week. After the game, be sure to join Caleb and I live at the Coventry Pizza Hut, broadcasting up until 11 o'clock with the Indiana Physical Therapy post-game show. Here we go with 7 hours committed to high school football coverage every Friday right here at 1380 The Fan and 100.9 FM. Zach Osterman will talk to us coming up in about 15 minutes. Of course, he covers the Indiana Hoosiers for the Indy Star, and we'll talk about that big matchup with the Indiana Hoosiers and the Cincinnati Bearcats coming up tomorrow down in Bloomington. Also on the way this hour, Kent Sterling, longtime Indianapolis radio voice. He will join us. He also has Breakfast with Kent and Inside Indiana Sports. He does videos mornings and afternoons that he features on his website, kentsterling.com. He'll give us his take on what to expect from this weekend, including the Colts versus the Rams this Sunday. Also in our next hour, we'll have a chance to visit with Blake Sebring. What an accomplished author he has become. And his latest book, for me, may be one of them that really strikes a chord, because there are so many Comet hockey fans and so many people here in Fort Wayne that live the moment when the Comets pulled off the most unlikely of championships back in 1993. Of course, the Franckes were fairly new owners at the time. The Comets were part of an IHL that had grown and expanded, almost creating a blueprint that left the Comets completely mismatched and out of their league, trying to play with teams from Salt Lake City, from Phoenix, from San Diego, from Atlanta. All of the bigger cities were starting to take over Kansas City, and the Comets somehow knocked off the mighty San Diego Gulls. And if you remember that story, you probably don't know all the details behind it. And Blake Sebring has put out a new book called Perfect, the 1993 Comets Championship Season and the Run Through the Playoffs. It's a fantastic book, and you've got to get yourself a copy. Perfect for a gift for any Comet hockey fan. But Blake Sebring is going to come talk to us about the book at about 5:20 this afternoon. 46862, what's on your mind? What's the big game you're heading to tonight? 46862, the Parkview Sports Medicine text line. Of course, the big one tonight is up in Kendallville with the Leo Lions and the East Noble Knights. Couple of undefeateds hooking up at East Noble, and probably the game that's going to decide the Northeast 8 Conference. Of course, it's hard to imagine just a few years ago that Leo was part of the Allen County Athletic Conference, because now you look at the ACAC and you talk about Adams Central and South Adams and how they've been kind of the dominant teams over the last 2-3 years. And it's almost mystifying, because you think of how good Leo has gotten as they have upped the competition going to the NE8. And then you also look at what it's done for Homestead and Carroll. Now, Homestead may be a little bit ahead of the game versus Carroll, but now you've got those two teams competing at the very top of the SAC. Carroll, a big game tonight. They're going to be at Bishop Dwenger. And Homestead, looking for the third consecutive SAC title. They've won the last two, but with the one loss head-to-head against Lewers, that heartbreaker where Lewers scored with 13.6 seconds left, that may be the game that ultimately is the deciding game in the SAC this year. But Homestead has to have a win at home against Snyder if Homestead's going to keep any hopes alive at winning the SAC title this year. The problem for Homestead is they don't have the head-to-head tiebreaker against Bishop Lewers, which means Homestead would have to hope almost for a tri-championship to win it outright when you don't have the tiebreaker against Lewers. Almost impossible. As we count down, because after tonight, we're going to have 4 weeks left of the regular season, and you'd have to have Lewers lose twice. Now, Lewers does have Dwenger and Snyder both on their schedule, so they've got a couple of tough games still ahead, But there would have to be a lot go right for Homestead that's out of Homestead's control. And that's always the toughest position to be in, is where you can't control your own destiny. You have to rely on others to take care of the dirty work for you. And that's what Homestead, the position Homestead would be in. Meanwhile, South Adams, the number one team in Class 1A, their first really tough test with a lineup that's been hit by injuries. Of course, we already knew that they were losing a great graduating class last year. They've got a tough trip down to Monroe Central, a team that they have hammered consistently over the last couple of years. And I assure you that Monroe Central is going to be amped up, ready to welcome the number one team in 1A, hoping to pull off the upset. And that will be a tough, tough challenge for South Adams on the road tonight, especially considering next week, just 1 week away, it's South Adams, Adams Central, the big one in the ACAC. Also tonight, game to keep an eye on, the Garrett Railroaders. This is a team that I really haven't quite figured out. I know they can be really good, but they can be just okay. They go to Eastside, and I don't know if they're at the level of the Eastside Blazers, but I don't know that Eastside is playing at the level that their potential would put them. So Garrett at Eastside will be another game we've got our eye on. Big night, high school football once again. Looks like we're going to have a nice night, a little bit warm, but that's fine. We'll take it as we move through the season. If you can stay warm and dry, we're okay with that. And it'll be another nice night for high school football. You can just lock it in right here at 1380 The Fan and 100.9 FM. Not only will we give you the play-by-play of the Snyder-Homestead game, but we're also going to be all over Harold Dwenger, Leo East Noble, giving you updates consistently throughout the night on what's happening at those two games. Plus, we'll have scores coming up at halftime tonight on the Hoopy Insurance Services Halftime Show with Garrett Eastside and South Adams Monroe Central. So keep it here. We'll keep you updated. And then after the game, the complete rundown of all the area scores, all the big games, all the area games will be right here on this spot on your radio dial with Caleb Hatch getting you all the scores. I'll join him out at the Coventry Pizza Hut. What a night we've got for high school football as we reach the halfway point of the regular season. And I guess halftime would be the halfway point of the regular season. And once the night is over, 24 minutes of football later, it'll be the halfway point of the season for about half the teams in Indiana, because you have that 10th game, which is guaranteed to everybody in Indiana as part of the state tournament. Regular season, 9 games, state tournament goes to 10, but then the teams that lose would be done after that 10th game. So I guess at some point tonight, either at halftime or after the game, it is officially halfway through the high school football season. Boy, it goes fast. Has it gone as fast for you, Caleb, as it's gone for me? Because my head is just spinning, feeling like we're just getting going with this season and already we're at the halfway point.
My head is still stuck in about mid-August. So, yes, it's gone very fast.
And, the temperature or weather tonight is kind of mid-August type weather. Warm, humid. But like I said, we're not going to complain. We're going to enjoy it as long as we can, because we all know when we get to late October and into November and we're playing postseason football, there's the greater chance of rain, cold temperatures. There can be some miserable conditions. But the one thing is, having more and more of our area schools that now have an artificial surface, it makes it so much better on Friday nights, because you don't have to worry about, well, I wonder how their field's going to hold up. And I wonder if they're going to be able to play at home if we get heavy rains on Thursday night into Friday. And That used to be the common thread every year, was as soon as there was any rain during postseason week, we had to worry about who was going to be able to host where and what stadium and who would have the best field conditions. Now, it's not all that much of a subject. Fort Wayne Community Schools does have an artificial surface. So if you have a Fort Wayne Community Schools team that advances, it probably wouldn't be difficult to move the game from any of the Fort Wayne Community Schools over to Spooler Stadium, where they can play on artificial turf. You've got the artificial surface now at Carroll. You also have a press box that accommodates all media for postseason play. You've got Homestead that's got the artificial surface. And then our East Allen County schools, they all went to artificial surface. So a lot of the schools in the area now do have the fake stuff. So that makes it a little bit nicer, not having to worry about inclement weather in the postseason. 46862, Parkview Sports Medicine text line. Any questions you've got about high school tonight? Of course, I'll give you my high school football picks of the week. If you missed them yesterday, I'll replay them for you today. That comes up somewhere in the neighborhood of 5:45, just as we lead up to the top of that 6 o'clock hour and our Parkview Sports Medicine high school football tailgate pregame show. All right, so last night, halftime of the Thursday night game, we learned something. I don't even know if we were anticipating that this was something even in the works. The Indianapolis Colts are going to be featured on an in-season edition of Hard Knocks. Now, I get it from the NFL standpoint as to why you would want to do this, because it's just about the time that you've got college basketball season starting. You want to, you know, build up as much drama and interest as teams get geared toward making the playoffs or getting into the playoffs. But there's a couple of things I find interesting about them choosing the Indianapolis Colts. Number one is telling you that the NFL kind of thinks that the Colts will still be in the running, at least at that point in the season, that there will be something of a storyline as to how the team is preparing and developing their team getting ready for a playoff run. But number two, who benefits from this, really? Do teams have any kind of benefit to be featured? Does it do anything for the team as far as marketability or selling tickets or selling jerseys? Because to me, the only beneficiary of this program, short of HBO, is it HBO that still has Hard Knocks, would be the NFL. I think it throws players under the bus. It doesn't do anything for the teams. I think this is just all about the NFL trying to figure out another way, another avenue to make a buck. And I don't know what's in it for the Colts. In fact, quite honestly, Caleb, I'm a little concerned about it.
It's never a good thing when your team is featured on Hard Knocks. I'll just leave it at that.
What do you think the storylines are that they're looking for with the Indianapolis Colts?
Chaos, turmoil, infighting.
Is that happening, though? I mean, we don't know of any of that going on with the Indianapolis Colts. I mean, this could be a rather boring addition because, I mean, the only thing you've got with the Colts, you've got the players that are not vaccinated. And whether or not that becomes a storyline, I don't know if the NFL is projecting that it might be. I think this, as part of the in-season edition, is going to feature more of, you know, what is it like, the stress, the pressures, the practice, and all that, preparing for games that are going to mean something as far as whether or not you make the playoffs and how you react to them. But where is the chaos? I mean, you've got a rather flamboyant owner, somebody who's got some personality that would make a good character probably for TV. Chris Ballard, somewhat stoic, but very transparent. He's always been fairly open in his discussions about the team and about the players. I don't know that Frank Reich is some kind of exciting personality as a head coach. Kind of boring. I mean, I guess where's the storyline as you see it? When you say that, you're implying that there's something that you think that is chaotic about this franchise and why they were selected. What is it?
Well, you have the owner and the coach and the GM with their concerns about the players who are not vaccinated. And then, honestly, there are storylines that will develop, you know, through the cameras. Now, whether that's necessarily real or not, editing will make it seem like it's bigger than it really is. I mean, you watch any reality show.
Oh, yeah.
And they pick and choose their spots when it comes to editing.
You've got the villains, the
story,
the heroes, mm-hmm. You know.
So it's stuff that's bubbling under the surface that we don't know about that will be amplified, whether that's necessarily a big deal or not. It's something to be concerned about. And to me, when I saw this, I thought, that's not a good sign. If I'm a player, I'm a coach associated with the team, you become aware that the cameras are there, but then after a little bit, you just kind of forget about it and you move on, and then that's when things kind of can come out.
And so what you're basically saying is that maybe there isn't chaos, but it could create chaos, because by having the cameras there and having clever editing creating some type of drama or storyline, it could actually put players in awkward positions. Maybe something that they said privately that didn't mean anything, but it was edited out of context, and all of a sudden it becomes a subject.
Correct.
Those are the types of things. So you don't think they picked them because of the current chaos. It's that once they hit town, chaos seems to ensue.
Yes, and we've seen this in years past, but that was during the preseason, so it's a little different. This will be more businesslike. and guys will not be as loose because actual games are on the line.
Right. And the other thing is you don't have as much time to practice. So that I don't know. I mean, other than a couple of days of practice and then prep for the game, it's going to be an entirely different look inside the Indianapolis Colts. But the Colts are going to be part of that. It's going to start in November and then continue, I think, through about the end of the regular season. 46862, Parkview Sports Medicine text line, 46862. We got Zach Osterman, who's going to be joining us coming up after the break to talk Indiana, Cincinnati. Back on the Sports Rush, your daily local sports fix, 4 to 6. Brett Rump with Caleb Hatch. It is high school football night right here at 1380 The Fan and 100.9 FM. On to Homestead, the Snyder Panthers and the Homestead Spartans tonight. Of course, it all starts with the Parkview Sports Medicine High School Football Tailgate pregame show at 6 p.m. Tomorrow, Indiana Hoosiers taking on the Cincinnati Bearcats in Bloomington, one of the biggest home games in some time for the Indiana Hoosiers. And, of course, the broadcast will be available on our sister station, Big 92.3 FM. And the guy covering it for the Indy Star joins us right now on our Masters Heating and Cooling Hotline. It's Zach Osterman. This is big. How do you describe what the atmosphere is like in Bloomington and what the atmosphere is expected to be tomorrow, Zach?
Well, I think it's building right now. I think you're actually probably going to see a decent number of people coming down tonight because they don't want to have to fight traffic tomorrow. They don't want to have to get through Martinsville, and they know that it's going to be a sellout, so you're probably going to have an even higher sort of number of people even just coming down to tailgate. I'll be honest. I mean, the atmosphere, I won't act like I've been walking around downtown all day, but it is different. There is a feeling of real, I think, anticipation. I think that it's down to the opponents, the difficulty of the game coming up. It's down to, obviously, even with the Iowa loss, a lot of the residual excitement from last season and the fact that fans couldn't be there for that, but they can be tomorrow. And I think it's also just down to sort of since the Idaho game and seeing how many fans, particularly students, turned out for that game, even though it's a Saturday night, it's obviously kind of a nondescript opponent. I think there's also just kind of been a feeling that this game, that there's just a lot of sort of grassroots kind of groundswell of energy for this. And it's been a long time since I think Indiana got a home game like this. I'm thinking, maybe when they had number one Ohio State coming in 2015 in a game that obviously they lost by a touchdown, but it was sold out in sort of a similar atmosphere. It's probably something close to that.
Indiana goes into this game tomorrow, and you look at what they've done so far through two games, and I guess the biggest question for me, I think a lot of the hopes of what we expected from the Indiana Hoosiers were riding on Michael Penix Jr. and him bouncing back from this injury. His performance has not graded out real well for me in the first couple of games, so I guess my question is it rust, or is this the Michael Penix after all the injuries? Is this the Michael Penix the Hoosiers have?
I mean, I think it's tough to say yet, and I certainly don't think it's all maybe rust. I certainly don't think it's all maybe something more enduring than that, if you want to say. It's been interesting to kind of quiz Tom Allen on it, and he feels like it's a lot more kind of issues of timing and rhythm than it is maybe anything technical or mechanical that Penix is struggling with, schematic that Penix is struggling with. But then the question is just, how quickly can Indiana kind of find where that comfort level is and how to get to it, for lack of a better term, for Michael Penix? Because I think that you can obviously see he is off, and I think he'd admit that to you. I think his teammates would also sort of say that, that they can be better, et cetera. And we also were dealing in a small sample size. There was kind of an everything that could go wrong went wrong game against Iowa, and then a game where Michael Penix against Idaho could have come out and thrown for 300 yards, and we still would have said, well, it's just Idaho. But to be very fair, he didn't, and so those questions do still linger a little bit. And I think that there's also a little bit, too, kind of on offensive coordinator Nick Sheridan, and he has said this very plainly, very, very directly. It's my job to figure out how to get Mike comfortable. It's my job to figure out how to meet him wherever he is and get him what he needs to get that timing, to get that rhythm, to get that confidence. And So, I mean, there's a lot that obviously goes into it. Indiana can also run the ball a lot better. Pass protection is still a bit of a work in progress. But you're not going to win games like this without a something, you know, a Michael Penix that resembles what he was, obviously, for the last couple seasons. Indiana's got to find that again soon.
Well, and that's my next question. My follow-up is, if you don't get that elite-type Michael Penix, can Indiana either cover up his performance or, I mean, how do they stay in this game if Penix doesn't play at that level? Is there any way for Indiana to do it?
I certainly think they can. Obviously, I think you've got to avoid, you know, the busts against Iowa. I mean, like, using Iowa kind of as the example, two of maybe the three worst plays of the game in that game come on the first two drives. You know, the 56-yard Goodson touchdown run, and then the first of Michael Penix's two pick sixes. And I'm not trying to reduce that game to just those two plays. Indiana had a lot to clean up on in all phases, frankly. It was an ugly game, and Indiana deserved to lose the way it did. But my point is, if Indiana could play just that little bit cleaner and those two plays don't happen, then that game doesn't maybe spiral quite out of control the way that it ultimately sort of did. If you're looking at the Cincinnati game, I've said this many times this week, I know this sounds a little bit reductive, a little bit simplistic, but it does kind of feel like a quarterback versus defense game on both sides. You've got two defenses there that are well-coached, that are experienced, that are established. You know, they go about it different ways, but they're both very, very disruptive defenses. And then you got two quarterbacks, and I think that at some level, again, I know this sounds simplistic, but the quarterback that figures out his opposing defense and outwits his opposing defense first and most often, I think, wins this game. And that doesn't necessarily mean if it's Penix or Ritter, I don't think they need to throw for 350 and four touchdowns to do that, so to speak. But I think that it's going to be the guy that can play a cleaner game, a more efficient game, can limit mistakes more. And then, of course, we can say, well, that's also going to involve running the football and, you know, receivers making catches and running good routes. All that's very true. But I think that, you know, if Indiana's going to get, let's say, a better performance from Michael Penix, but still maybe not the, you know, the absolute kind of 100% what we know is his previous ceiling kind of performance, then it's also going to come down to, A, limiting things like turnovers, and B, for that defense, keeping this team in the game early on, because I know that the defense overall at Iowa probably played a fairly good game, but it's worth pointing out that the first big play of the game is a defensive bust, and that's what starts kind of Indiana's spiral in that game. So I think that it can do that. I think this defense is good enough to kind of hold Indiana in this game if Michael Penix is still a little rusty, if the offense takes a little while to gear up. But they got to do it, and it's easier said than done when you're talking about going against a quarterback like Desmond Ritter.
Cincinnati coach Luke Fickell's had his name mentioned tied in with that USC opening. I don't know if you've been able to get any kind of sense or read on it at this point so far, if you've been able to follow any of the press conferences or his availability over in Cincinnati. But is there any chance that could be a distraction with Cincinnati?
I suppose it's possible. The one thing I would think at this point, we have seen Fickell's name mentioned prominently a number of open jobs. You know, a couple of years ago, there was a ton of smoke around would he be interested in the Michigan State job? It's never come open, but, you know, as Jim Harbaugh's status has kind of fluctuated at Michigan, people have said, well, would an Ohio State guy take the Michigan job? And yada, yada, yada. I would think at this point for that program, for that roster, for that staff, that locker room, if you're not used to it now, I don't know if you're ever going to be, if that makes sense. And this is not me by any means predicting that Luke Fickell is going to be at Cincinnati forever. I think that he's probably going to wind up in the not very distant future being one of those coaches that you look at and say he's earned the right to move on to a bigger job. But I just think that his name has come up in these kinds of conversations so often that I just can't imagine Cincinnati's not used to that at some level. And particularly, too, even if it's something where, you know, guys are concerned or they're hearing it or whatever, it's week three. I think everybody at least understands that it's not like Luke Fickell's going to pick up in the middle of the season and leave. So I would be surprised if that's a major factor, frankly.
Look forward to the coverage, Zach. Enjoy it.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me, as always.
Always. That is Zach Osterman from the Indy Star joining us. He covers the Indiana Hoosiers for the Indy Star, and you can, of course, follow him on Twitter, keep up with what he has there, or you can get your subscription to the Indy Star online. We're going to take a timeout. When we come back on the other side of the break, we've got Ken Sterling. He will talk Colts-Rams coming up Sunday. Colts trying to avoid that dreaded 0-2 start. But just how significant is it this year with 17 games? That's one of the questions we'll ask Kent when we come back here on the Sports Rush on 1380 The Fan and 100.9 FM. Big high school football Friday night here at 1380 The Fan and 100.9 FM out at Homestead for the Snyder Panthers and the Homestead Spartans. Of course, Jim, Shannon, and Duke get the night started with the Parkview Sports Medicine High School Football Tailgate Pregame Show. That's under the tent at the south entrance starting at 6 p.m. Shannon and I have the call of the game, and afterwards, Caleb and I will join forces for the Indiana Physical Therapy Postgame Show, live from the Coventry Pizza Hut up until 11 o'clock. Coaches, interviews, analysis, scores, and more right here. 7 hours of high school football coverage on 1380 The Fan and 100.9 FM. Got to break a little bit from our high school theme on this Friday edition of the Sports Rush because we want to talk Colts football, and to do that, we are pleased to be joined once again on the Masters Heating and Cooling Hotline by our buddy down in Indianapolis, longtime radio voice, and you catch him at KentSterling.com. It is Kent Sterling. Good afternoon, sir.
Hey, Brett, how are you? I'm doing
real well, real well. Excited about another night of high school football. I just get excited about Fridays because it's a sports weekend. You kick it off in a great way with high school football. Hey, can you tell me, I don't know if you've got a favorite down there, but in all of Indianapolis area, there's so many good football teams, but who has the best atmosphere on Friday night?
Oh, wow. You know what? Carmel is usually really, really good. I'd say Westfield's good. Center Grove's good. Those are kind of my faves. I enjoy going and watching Cathedral play because I've kind of fallen in love with this kid, Danny O'Neill. Mm-hmm. He's a sophomore and just really seems to love playing. So I spend a lot of Friday nights watching Danny playing. That's a lot of fun.
Up here we've got East Noble hosting Leo, a couple of unbeatens, top five teams in Class 4A. That's going to be a huge game, but nothing like an East Noble atmosphere. The community supports them so much. It's just so much fun to be a part of on Friday nights when you get that community support. Everybody packs the stadium. It's so much fun. Can't wait to get out and do it tonight. Let's talk Colts. And, once again, what is the deal with the Colts? It seems like year in, year out, it's always injuries that seem to be the first subject. And it's been that way since the start of training camp. Now we find out Braden Smith is the one that's out. So instead of a left tackle, we're talking about a right tackle. Xavier Rhodes still not going to play against the Rams.
Yeah.
This is tough. And I guess I look at this, and at first I want so much to be able to take the Colts with the 3.5 because I like the hook, but these injuries, Kent, I just don't know if they can overcome them.
And that Julian Blackman is questionable, and, you know, you've got a bunch of other questionable guys. Somehow Paris Campbell. Paris Campbell, again, he's got an abdomen deal. I think it's one area of his body that he hadn't hurt before, and he's questionable. Quentin Nelson, questionable. Quiddy Pay, Michael Pittman. This is just awful. Not only are there just a bunch of injuries, they're to absolutely the wrong people, the absolute people you do not want to be injured when you're going up against the Los Angeles Rams, because they offensively and defensively are among the best teams in the NFL. So this didn't come at a good time, or maybe it did if everybody gets healthy, because it was unlikely in the extreme, it would seem, that the Colts were going to be terribly competitive in this game if you judge them based upon their opener.
Okay, so the offensive line, we've talked about the injuries. Of course, Quentin Nelson had the training camp injury with the foot, but he bounced back from that. Eric Fisher, who we didn't expect to be available until after a first couple of games anyway, but now Braden Smith. One thing during the offseason that it seemed to be a priority for Chris Ballard was to build depth with the offensive line. And yet, as we have injuries to the starters in that offensive line, it becomes a major liability for the Colts. Did Chris Ballard fail in that regard this offseason?
Here's what happens, Brett, and you know this, that as a general manager, when you make mistakes, you wind up chasing them. And that's really what the Colts have done with drafting edge guys in the second round. Kamoko Ture hasn't been what Chris Ballard thought he would be. Ben Banigou hasn't been what he thought Ben would be. And so you wind up having to spend a first-round pick, the 21st overall, on Kwity Paye. You spend a second-round pick on Dio Odengbo. And so you're chasing these mistakes down the road, and that means that you're not able to take that draft equity and plug other holes that you've got. And they've got holes at cornerback. They've got depth issues on the offensive line. So they took Odengbo instead of going out and getting a young left tackle. You don't know how long Fisher's going to be able to play. He's just under contract for the season. So this may be a mistake that they continue to chase down the road. And if Wentz doesn't work out, you've really put yourself in a bind because you don't have a first-round pick in the 2022 draft if Carson Wentz takes 70% of the snaps. So you've kind of painted yourself into a corner, and Chris Ballard had been so good for so long at staying out of that game where he had to paint himself in a corner. He has now, and if these guys don't pan out, if you don't get good play out of Fisher, if you don't get good play out of Wentz, and if Paye doesn't pay off, you got real problems moving forward into 22, 23, and 24. And Jim Irsay just signed both Reich, and is a couple of weeks ago, and Ballard to an extension through 2026. I really don't know what Jim Irsay was thinking, but if this doesn't work, the Colts have kind of mired themselves in mediocrity for the kind of an extended period of time.
Talking to Kent Sterling. Of course, you can follow him at kentsterling.com. Great morning and afternoon videos where he breaks down Indiana sports. Okay, so last week I talked until I was blue in the face about one of the keys against Seattle is to not let Russell Wilson beat you with the deep ball. He's one of the best deep ball throwers in the NFL. And he ends up converting and throwing a couple of deep balls to Tyler Lockett. Kari Willis got burned bad on a couple of those plays. It put the Colts in a tough position of catch-up, and I don't think that's the position the Colts are ideally suited for. They want to be able to run the football, control the clock, try to get the game within a possession or have that close lead. So they get to the fourth down, and I want to get your opinion on the fourth and two.
Yeah.
I think you need two scores. You never know what the future is going to hold, but you're in a fourth down position, and you need a field goal at some point. I said take the field goal. I know it's a 50-50 split on this. What did you think about the decision at the time, and have you had a chance to kind of think about it, and have you changed your mind?
I was yelling at the TV that Frank needed to take the three. If you're going to be able to get it, a lot of times winning requires that you don't lose. Sometimes you need to put yourself in a position where it's more likely you're not going to lose than it is that you're going to win, if that makes any sense. And I think kicking a field goal in that moment cuts the lead to 8 and puts you in a position where if you get the ball back, you got a chance to tie, even though that's kind of a long shot, getting it in the end zone and then converting the 2-point conversion. But I think you take points. And Frank Reich, again and again and again, seems predisposed toward these sort of wild gambles of going for it on fourth down rather than taking points. And I get it. They've got two analytics guys who are full-time guys with the franchise, and they're sitting up in a suite, and they're going through all the calculations and the calculus of those decisions. But that's not the way football's played. Alabama, nothing against Alabama as an educational institution. They win a lot of national championships. MIT has yet to win a national championship. I don't believe they have a football team. That's how important mathematics is to football, that Alabama can dominate and MIT, they don't even play. So I don't like the analytics guy saying, it's a full go. You've got a 64% chance of this, that, or the other. Stop it. Just feel what the game is. Take points when they're yours to take and move on with the game, and don't put yourself in a position where it's impossible that you're going to win when you could have put yourself in a position where it was at least then possible.
You are so on, because I feel like you have to be able to read the room, and sometimes the room doesn't always know what the analytics are telling them. And I thought in this case, the defense had played so hard to give the offense an opportunity to chip away at that lead. And when the offense failed, You could see it with the defense when they came on the field. They had had some air taken out of their balloon. They had less energy, less enthusiasm. And, of course, Seattle just pokes it right down the field on them real quick. I felt like the offense failing in that position cost the defense. Yeah.
Absolutely, and that's right. It's and that's the way the game's played. You've got the three kind of subdivisions of the roster, and if one doesn't pick up the other, you've got real problems. And I think that that's kind of what the Colts have. And I think that Frank Reich, being such an offensive guy, is putting that defense in a position where they have to do kind of heroic work, and it doesn't work. And I think over time, you know, Larry Bird always said that nobody listens to a head coach more than 3 years. And I think there's something to that. This is year four for Frank Reich, and he needs to do something in week four, or you're going to have people who kind of, especially on the defensive side of the ball, shrug their shoulders and say, okay, you know, this is what it is. We're never going to get there from here because this guy just doesn't get it, and you don't want that for your franchise.
I look at this Rams team, Kent, and I think – you can really simplify what you need to do defensively to take away some of their offense. First of all, Cooper Kupp, such a big part of their offense, and we've seen that when Cooper Kupp wasn't available to play for the Rams. I feel like you've got a key on him, try to take him away. I don't think they can beat you strictly by the run, and I think you put pressure on Stafford just to make him uncomfortable. I think the Colts defensively can make things tough on the Rams.
You know, and that's where they've got to win the game, because they're not going to make that defense uncomfortable. You know, but they do have – they kind of got triplets now with Jefferson being pretty good. With Jefferson, Woods, and Kupp, you got guys who can go deep, and we saw it last week against the Bears. You know, the Bears' defense is not bad, and the Rams made them look ridiculous. Stafford put up numbers that were good enough to be named the NFC Offensive Player of the Week. And if you let them get off, if you let him get comfortable and let him throw it downfield, you're going to be chasing a deficit. And like you said earlier, you cannot chase deficits if you're the Colts. They are not built for that. They are. You know what? They had an 11.5-minute time of possession advantage last weekend against the Seahawks. That's what they want, but you've also got to score points. If you turn clock when you're behind by 11 points or 18 points or however many points you're behind, if your offense requires a lot of time to score the football, you've got a real problem on your hands. And the Colts, I think they will this Sunday. They did last Sunday. I keep trying to figure out a way in the world that the Colts are going to be competitive in this game, and I've come up empty.
Red zone offense, you know, that's one of the things. You can have it all day long, but if you can't finish it with touchdowns, it's tough to play in the NFL. And I think red zone offense is really keyed by the offensive line. And last week, the offensive line was just atrocious.
Yeah, you know, you look at a guy like Julian Davenport, and Julian Davenport's not built to be a starting left tackle. And it looks like he's either going to start at left tackle, although Eric Fisher was full go today at practice, and that's a good thing, or he's going to start on the other side in place of Braden Smith, who's out now, as you mentioned. And Julian Davenport just can't play. It's hard to go get tackles. Tackles are really, really scarce in the NFL. And to go get a guy who can plug and play at that position, the Colts have been chasing that in drafts for since LaRaven Clark and before that. I mean, you can go back to forever ago. They drafted the kid out of Villanova immediately after Anthony Costanzo in the 2010 draft. And, you know, they just have not had great luck putting together a deep offensive line. And I think that that's going to cost them on Sunday. And you've got Aaron Donald, who's just as comfortable at left defensive tackle as right defensive tackle. And so if Quentin Nelson plays, that's great, but he's going to go ahead and line up on the other side against Glowinski and Davenport, and that's not a matchup you're looking forward to seeing if you're a Colts fan.
Give you an idea of how bad it's been for the Colts trying to get a tackle out of the draft is the right tackle they do have. Braden Smith was actually drafted as a guard. That tells you how bad they're whiffing at getting tackles. You know, the one tackle they
and
get.
And how bad they've whiffed at evaluating tackles.
Yeah.
Because they drafted Braden Smith to be a guard.
Yes.
And I talked to Chris Ballard at camp, that camp, and I said, you know, he looks like a tackle to me. And he goes, oh, yeah, he's a guard. I said, really? It looks like a tackle. And he goes, well, you know what, he's a guard. Trust me, he's a guard. And it wasn't three games into the season he was a starting right tackle. So I'm not saying I know more than Chris Ballard. I'm cherry-picking a time that I was right. But you stand next to him, you're like, okay, you're a right tackle or you're an offensive tackle, and he is.
Ken, that is so funny because I had Frank Reich on the show just after the draft last year, and I had the exact same conversation with Frank. I said, what are you doing putting this guy at guard? It looks like he's going to be a tackle. No, he's a guard. We drafted him as a guard. I said, he's got the body and the frame and footwork of a tackle. Oh, we're going to keep him at guard and see, you know, how it goes. We think he's got a future as a guard. And so it's kind of funny. You and I were kind of both working it at the time. All right, so against the Rams, what are the keys? If the Colts have any chance in this football game, what has to go right?
They got to be able to run the football. You know, you've got to have Jonathan Taylor kind of have a big day. They gave up some yards, 108 yards, to David Montgomery of the Bears, and they looked a little bit vulnerable against the run game. But you can't, like, there are teams that don't even bother to defend the run anymore. Like the Chiefs, you can't get them to bite on play action because they just don't care about the run. They know that if a team relies on the run to move the ball down the field, eventually you're going to get in the red zone and they're going to be stopped. And if you trade three for our seven, you're going to get beat. So running the football as your primary mode of operation offensively is a losing bet. But that's kind of what the Colts have to do. The Colts have got to run the football, and like you said, they got to be able to run it in the red zone and put it in the end zone. And if they don't, Matt Stafford and Woods and Kupp and Jefferson and that whole crew – they're going to be very, very tough to outscore if you can't move the football down the field via the run, especially if Pittman can't play or Campbell can't play. Those are your two primary weapons. Again, the Colts, and I'm going to say they're stuck with, but Zach Pascal's better than that. They're stuck with Zach Pascal as their primary receiver again, and I don't know how that continues to hit. This is just bizarre, the number of injuries and the position at which those injuries occur.
Real quick, Kent, before I let you go, just want to ask about the 0-2, because I talked about this in the first segment, said I was going to ask you the question. 0-2 generally on a 16-game season doesn't look good. About 11% the teams go on to make the
right
playoffs. It's a 17-game season now. I look at the 0-2, and I'm like, you know, when you look at the schedule, it's just the way it's laid out. I mean, you have two of your toughest games right off the top with NFC West opponents that are both really, really good, both have really solid quarterbacks, and none of those losses, the two losses, would be against an AFC opponent, a divisional opponent, a head-to-head against a team that you might have to have a tiebreaker against to make the playoffs. It's not the worst thing in the world. I'm not trying to prepare myself so I don't get on the ledge on Sunday night. But it's not the worst thing in the world to be 0-2.
It's not, but that really makes that game in week three against Tennessee ultimately important.
They might be 0-2 too, Kent. They might be 0-2 going out to Seattle.
They could be, but even at that, if you go to 0-3 and the Titans are 1-2 and they've got the tiebreaker because of that one win, you really put a premium on that home game against the Titans. I just don't think that with Carson Wentz as a quarterback and the weapons that the Colts have that appear to be healthy and project to be healthy, I think it gets very difficult to repeat what they did in 2018 with Andrew Luck, where Luck came back. I think they started 1-5, they finished 10-6, they go to the playoffs. I think that replicating that magic coming back from 1-5 becomes really, really difficult unless everybody gets healthy and they stay healthy, and the offense starts to click. I think that this just feels, and that year, I didn't really feel it. I didn't feel like it was unraveling. This year, I get this sense of foreboding that this thing is coming apart at the seams, at least this year. And they got to figure out, I don't know what it is, but they got to figure out a way to get healthy and stay healthy. Their injury report, we look at it week after week. They got scads of guys on the injury report, and opposing teams have nobody. Like the Rams practiced everybody yesterday. One guy was limited. Everybody else was full. And the Colts are walking wounded after one game in the regular season, and they got to figure it out. Either it's their preseason protocol or it's their training staff. Somehow or another, they got to figure out how to get healthy and stay healthy.
And yeah, that injury list is amazing. It's like two guys get back to practice, and we're like, yes, they're back. And then you see three guys that ended up getting hurt. It just, the math isn't working. It's awful. It's awful. But hopefully they will get healthy, certainly get things back on track. So Hard Knocks doesn't have that as the storyline when they show up in November. Hey, Kent, we're out of time. I got to go. But man, it is always a pleasure. So much fun to get a chance to talk to you. We'll hope to talk to you again soon.
You're the best, Brett. Thanks.
Thank you. Kent Sterling joining us on the Masters Heating and Cooling Hotline. Kent, you can follow him at kentsterling.com. You should always follow him on Twitter. Always a lot of fun to catch up with Kent Sterling.
Podcasts by Federated Media.